We are hearing a number of executive appointments today. I know we have a number of folks in the audience. I would like to start, and I will open a public hearing on the Ocean Policy Advisory Council and invite Paul Engelmeyer, Robin Hartman, and Ono Hussein up. And then next step, we'll have Scott McMullen, Fred Sickler, and Frank Warrens, and then we'll do the rest of the folks by phone. So, Mr. Engelmeyer, Ms. Hartman, and Mr. Husing.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Paul Engelmeyer.
Could you tell us a little bit about yourself and why you'd like to participate on the Ocean Policy Advisory Council?
Sure. I've been a coastal resident since the early 80s, and I've been dealing with natural resource issues, either working in the woods, doing contracting with the Forest Service, and advisory panels to the Pacific Fishery Management Council for 15 to 20 years. And these last 6 years or so, I've been dealing with nearshore issues and offshore issues, and I've gotten more and more engaged in conservation issues related to the ocean. And I've supported the Territorial Sea Plan and Goal 19, and I see a good opportunity to move some of our conservation strategies into our nearshore environment. And so I support it, and I'd like to try and help move these things forward.
Great. And have you ever served on a board or commission before for the state of Oregon?
Actually, I was appointed to the Ocean Policy Advisory Council last, and I think I made one meeting before it was put in a holding pattern.
Okay.
So I was on for one session.
All right. Thank you. Questions for Mr. Engelmeyer? None. Okay. So thank you.
Thanks for your willingness to serve.
Yeah. Ms. Hartman, Mr. Husing. Nobody in the audience? Okay, all right. Mr. McMullen, Mr. Sickler, and Mr. Warrens. Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to your Senate Rules Committee. Thanks for joining us. Again, if you could just tell us a little bit about yourself and why you'd like to serve on the Ocean Policy Advisory Council.
All right. I wanted to, first of all, thank you for having me here, and Chair Brown and members of the committee. My name is Fred Sickler. I reside in Lincoln City on the Central Oregon coast. At the present time, am I a business operator there.
And what is the business that you operate? What type of business is it?
It's a surf shop, Oregon Surf Shop.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And
probably you're not missing out on too much business today.
Not
I'll
today.
Think.
No.
And how long have you been doing that?
I've been owner of the business for nearly 10 years, and. But I've been surfing and doing the other recreational types of ocean activities for probably 45 years. I'm also a retired educator. I taught school and retired.
Where did you teach school, sir?
I've taught at Roseburg High School and Plus Community College.
Okay.
And taught at Taft High School in Lincoln City for a number of years also, and retired from there.
Great. And why are you interested in serving on the Ocean Policy Advisory Council?
Well, I think I bring the expertise of doing recreational types of activities, which I think would be helpful for OPEC. I have been involved in a number of activities, say with Surfrider Foundation, where we've done water sampling and that sort of thing. So I am concerned about nearshore and activities which are that need improvement, or we need to collect data on to see if we need improvement.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you go ahead?
Good morning, Chair Brown. I'm Frank Warren and Senators. I'm actually the second generation owner of a 60-year-old automotive repair business in the city of Portland, and for the past 30 years I've been a charter boat operator out of the ports of Warrington and Hammond. I'm also currently a member of the Pacific Fishery Management Council. I served council prior years from 87 to 96. I was a former member of the OPAC and I'm well familiar with almost all of the issues concerning the coastal counties and the fishing industry, both commercial and recreational. I think the charge or the obligation of OPAC is to carefully deal and consider all issues having to do, particularly now with marine protected areas and other protections for fish. I'm well familiar with those issues, having been a member of the Fishery Council now for a number of years, and I'd like to continue in that position.
Great. Questions for the panel? Senator Lingo.
Thank you. Thanks to both of you for your willingness to serve. I appreciate mm-hmm. it. Mr. Warren, just a question. You mentioned the you didn't use the word marine reserves. That's an issue that's has come up, and I'm just wondering if you have any thoughts about where marine reserves stand in our fisheries management.
Currently, the Pacific Fishery Management Council has enacted a large closure area off the entire west coast from Canada to Mexico called the Rockfish Conservation Area. And in a sense, that is a marine protected area. It prohibits fishing for rockfish in that area. It's a huge area, over 20,000 square miles. Last week in Tacoma, the Pacific Fishery Management Council also dealt with issues concerning the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary, as well as the Channel Islands Marine Sanctuary. So there is now a significant amount of area off our west coast that is a marine protected area. A marine reserve, as opposed to a marine protected area, is an area that oftentimes allows no fishing whatsoever. And if and where those are justified for legitimate conservation purposes, then we, the OPAC, should consider, as we did during the last session of OPAC, those areas.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
And I apologize, Senator Ringo. You're in my district. I was intending to send you a letter prior to this hearing, and I just got back last weekend from...
I understand busy, Mr. Warren.
We won't hold it against you that you're in his district, Senator Shields.
Thank you.
I guess I'd like to ask both of you to give a response in follow-up to Senator Ringo's question. I'm not sure I understand it, but what's the similarity or difference between the Marine Reserve idea and the Marine Reserve idea and that of a nursery? Because I've heard them say that a reserve can actually become like a nursery, and maybe it's just in more temperate waters than our own. I don't know. But I was just kind of wanting to know if that would feed into your thinking about how a reserve might be used for recovery of species.
Chair Brown, Senator Shields, I believe that in the context of what you just laid out, the difference between a nursery area and a marine reserve may be somewhat synonymous. There are various levels of marine reserves regarding the protections afforded the species of fish that live within that reserve. They, in fact, are in a lot of sense, or to a great degree, a nursery area for species of fish that reside within the area described within the reserve. But again, they may or may not allow fishing of any kind. They may allow certain kinds of fishing or other activities in addition to fishing.
Okay.
Chair Brown and Senator Shields, I see the reserve as a nursery, as an area that can also be near shore, even in estuaries, and I think that those are some primary reasons that we need to look at what's entering and how those areas should be monitored, and people need to be educated about all of the influences on that area particularly.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any further questions? Thank you both very much. We appreciate your willingness to serve as well as your willingness to join us this morning. So thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Anybody else here from the Ocean Policy Advisory Council? Okay, we're going to start at the top then and go up to apprenticeship and training, Jason Landon. Good morning, Mr. Landon.
Good morning.
How are you this morning?
Good.
Tell us a little bit about yourself and why you're interested in this particular appointment.
Okay, good morning. My name is Jason Landon. I'm a electrical contractor out of Portland, also a trustee member for NECA IBEW Local 48 Training Center, third generation electrical contractor. I see firsthand the importance of apprenticeship and training for skilled trades being the backbone of our industry. That's my basic interest in this council.
Okay. Have you ever served on a board or commission before?
No.
Okay. Did they grow you in what your duties and obligations and responsibilities are?
Sort of. I've been.
Okay. All right. Any questions for this particular appointment? Okay. Thank you very much. We really appreciate your willingness to join us this morning. Okay. All right. Next, for the Board of Dentistry, we have Jill Mason. Good morning.
Good morning, Senator Brown, Chair Brown, and members of the committee. My name is Jill Mason. I'm from Portland, and I've been nominated to the Oregon Board of Dentistry. I wish to serve in this capacity because of my desire to help assure that Oregonians can receive the highest quality oral health care possible. I bring a broad background experience to this position. I've served on Board of Dentistry committees in the past, and I'm currently chair of their Dental Hygiene Committee, and therefore I have a familiarity with the board activities. I've been in the profession for 25 years with experience in general practice, specialty practice, and public health clinics for the underserved. My educational background and my passion is in public health, and I have taught and published in that field. For the past 15 years, I've taught both dental and dental hygiene students in a variety of subjects, including clinical practice. And as a result, I'm very familiar with the educational preparation and the licensure process for both professions. I feel that this broad base of clinical experience, education in public health, and many years of educating dental professionals provides a unique combination that will benefit Oregonians, and I would consider it an honor to serve.
Thank you. I note for your resume that you were raised in rural parts of the state and you've been involved in AHAC. Could you talk a little bit about what role you see the Board of Dentistry in terms of making sure that all Oregonians have access to dental care?
I feel like that it's the board's role to assure that all Oregonians have access to good oral health care. I know that there are access issues in the state. I know some of the issues before the board have been how to, or what considerations for other practice alternatives that might bring more care to more people, particularly in rural areas.
Okay. And this won't affect your appointment, but I'm just curious what you think about fluoride and whether or not we should put it in the water.
I think 60 years of research and the fact that people in Grand Rapids are not psychotic or communists or those kinds of things, where fluoride started, means that we have good support for fluoride in the water, and I sure wish my kids had it.
Thank you.
I can tell the difference in my mouth.
Thank you. Question, Senator Ringo.
Well, I won't ask you about fluoride. We had a lot of testimony on that bill a week or so ago. I do, though, appreciate your willingness to serve. My question has to do with what is the board's role with respect to reviewing citizen complaints about dentists and potentially disciplining dentists?
Having not actually been on the board and then privy to those actions of the board, I would say that their role would be to review those cases or those complaints that come before them, determine how to resolve those between the practitioner and the client of the practitioner, and look at other solutions that can't be resolved.
Okay, just to follow up.
Feel free, Senator Ringo.
Will you take seriously that component of your responsibility to protect the public with respect to the conduct of members of your profession?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, as a faculty member teaching those very professionals right now, I take it very seriously now in my job that those that we graduate should be competent.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Shields.
I will join my colleague, Senator Ringo, in not asking you about fluoride, but I will ask you a question about the politics of fluoride. In the hearing that Senator Ringo referred to, we seem to have what I call competing sciences. The presence of heavy metals in the byproduct from which a lot of people in municipal water systems get their fluoride, the presence of heavy metals like mercury, and I forget, Senator Ringo might remember the rest of them. When I first moved to Portland, there was a vote in the city of Portland on the use of fluoride, and it went down. And like you, I made a comment to somebody, there must be a lot of people that think that fluoride's a communist plot. I then, over the years, have become aware that even the website of the company that provides most of the fluoride to municipal water systems indicates that in their product there are heavy metals. And given the competing sciences and given that there's some credibility in both of the sciences, what do you think about the politics of this issue? Do you follow what I'm saying?
Well, I think it becomes a very emotional issue, and we forget some of the science background that occurs. There's been a tremendous amount of research into community water fluoridation, the use of fluorides for preventing dental caries, and many other modalities. It does become, when it becomes an issue to vote on, it becomes an emotional issue and, like you say, a political issue as opposed to a scientific issue. I personally am a proponent of fluoride. I've seen what it can and can't do. And I've also, in my studies in public health, have obviously, you know, seen the research and heard the research from other sides. I still remain a proponent of fluoride, and I can tell you from personal experience that when a patient sits in my chair at the dental school and I can look in their mouth and I can say, "You're not from Portland, are you? You don't have enough metal in your mouth." And 99 times out of 100, I'm correct. They grew up where there was fluoride. And to me, that the cost of dental care, both in human terms and financial terms, is huge. And access to care falls into that issue also. So I still remain a proponent, and I have heard the arguments on both sides, obviously, in my 25 years in the profession. But.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Shields. Ms. Mason, thank you. Unless there's any further questions, I just want to say you've done Ontario, Oregon proud. So
thank you.
We look forward to your service.
And Ontario, Florida.
Okay. I got a note. It's a dare you to ask about amalgam fillings. Amalgam fillings. I can't even say it this morning. I know there's been some controversy. So I take most dares.
Like ready to jump off the building.
No.
Well, some similarities exist there. There's an awful lot of research on amalgam fillings and how long they've been around and how safe they are. And, you know, the thought that maybe we should remove them all and put in another kind of material that hasn't been around as long, maybe doesn't have as much research and doesn't have that basis. I don't have any problem with amalgam fillings. They've been proven over many, many years.
Right. Thank you. We appreciate your willingness to serve on this board.
mercury, fluoride.
Right. next up, for the Marine Board, I have George Tinker from Coos Bay. Actually, he's going to be here by phone. Okay. Just going to move on the list. Patient Safety, Nancy Chi. Good morning, Ms. Chi.
Good morning, Chair Brown and members of the committee. My name is Nancy Chi, and I'm from Portland. Thank you for the opportunity to serve on the Patient Safety Commission. I'm currently a director at Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon. I am the director of Management Information Reporting. My healthcare experience, and in particular with data collection, analysis, and management, is what has brought me here today. I feel my skills will be an asset to the Commission as it moves forward in building and developing its reporting program. And I also look forward to serving the citizens of Oregon.
Okay. Questions? I guess the group is pretty questioned out. Thank you very much. We appreciate you joining us today, and good luck in your service. Psychiatric Security Review Board, Julia Colbert.
Good morning, Chair Brown and members of the committee. My name is Julia Hurlbert, and I live in Salem. I am requesting to be appointed to the position of the Psychiatric Security Review Board. I believe my extensive experience as a parole and probation officer working with all kinds of offenders, including those with mental illness, makes me qualified for this position. I'd like to serve on this board because I believe my experience in corrections can be a benefit to the decisions this board must make, and I'd be honored to serve on this board.
Thank you. Ms. Hurlbert, one of the proposals before the legislature is Senate Bill 232, which would essentially create a juvenile psychiatric security review board. Assuming the legislature passes it, have you had any experience working with juveniles? Do you feel comfortable addressing the juvenile needs in this area?
I do have experience working with juveniles. I was a probation officer in California for several years working with just juveniles. That's been some years ago, and so I don't have any recent experience working with juveniles, but I think I would feel comfortable in that role.
Okay.
Probably not as experienced as somebody currently working with juveniles.
But. Okay. And one of the criteria for the Psychiatric Security Review Board is public safety, and could you talk about how you see the Psychiatric Security Review Board fulfilling addressing the needs of public safety while making sure treatment and et cetera needs are met of the detainees?
Well, Senator Brown and the committee, I think public safety would be the utmost priority. I think any kinds of decisions would have to be made with that in mind foremost. That I'd have to feel comfortable along with other members of the board that this would not only benefit the patient but would be in the best interest also of the community to have this person, the decisions that would be made would have to be made with those in mind.
Okay, thank you. Questions for Ms. Hurlbert? Thank you very much. We appreciate your willingness to serve.
Thank you.
My understanding is Mr. Scott McMullen is here, Ocean Policy Advisory Council. Good morning.
Morning. Chair Brown, members of the committee, thank you. I apologize for my late arrival.
That's okay. You had a long way to travel. Could you please tell us a little bit about yourself and why you wish to serve on the Ocean Policy Advisory Council?
Yes, Chair Brown, members of the committee, I'm Scott McMullen. I fished commercially with my own vessel for 20-some years. Before that, I worked as a deckhand and a crewman, came up through the forecastle, as they say, and have been involved continuously with the fishing industry since then. My current position is as Executive Director of the Oregon Fishermen's Cable Committee, a group that works cooperatively between submarine cable companies and commercial fishermen to cooperate with the use of the seabed so that neither industry suffers any adverse impact. We work together to site cables and protect the fishing industry.
Questions? Senator Ringo.
Thank you very much for coming this morning, Mr. McMullen, and your willingness to serve. As a commercial fisherman, how do you balance managing for the short-term benefit of your industry as opposed to the long-term benefit of your industry, where they may not always be consistent with each other? And I guess in particular, how does the concept of marine reserves fit in with that?
Well, Senator Ringo, I believe that we do need to look at marine reserves as one option in management. It certainly isn't the only option. There's many management measures that are currently in place that seem to be doing an adequate job bringing back stocks that have been overfished. Of course, the definition of overfished just means that there's less fish than we had hoped. Even the case where you have predation by sea lions on flounder creates a situation of overfishing, even though the commercial fleet has nothing to do with that. But I do believe that we have to look at marine reserves. I want the OPAC to be careful that in any recommendations we look at the whole scope of options and that we establish some trial methods to see first the effectiveness of reserves before we block off the whole ocean.
Right. Follow up?
Sure, Senator Ringo.
I'm not a fisheries expert by any means. What you just said, though, I found interesting. How long would it take before you knew whether the marine reserve was effective?
Well, I served under the previous OPAC, under Governor Kitzhaber. I was chairman of a marine reserve subcommittee for OPAC.
I see.
And we looked carefully, and it looks to me like a minimum of 20 years would be necessary to get an adequate check on a reserve to see if it would do the things that we would hope that they would do.
It's not a
short-term thing. It takes a long time to see the effectiveness of a marine reserve.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Mr. McMullen, given your previous role on this council, as you're probably aware, we've struggled with getting new membership appointed and this kind of back together again. What role do you see in terms of helping this council getting started and getting off the ground and hopefully being a successful council?
Well, I believe that we have some excellent returning members who will do a good job bringing the new people up to speed. I've looked at the nominees, and I think there's an excellent group of people from a variety of backgrounds that will do a great job in moving forward from where we left off under the last OPAC.
One of the concerns that we had about the earlier composition of the council is that there was a lack of folks from the North Coast serving on this council, and I guess I note that Mr. Jim Bergeron is also from Astoria. Do you think you and he can handle the North Coast slot and are strong enough to carry the rest of the load?
Well, I hope that's the case.
Okay.
Certainly believe that to be true.
All right. Senator Shields.
I'd like to return to Senator Ringo's question about marine reserves. You were on chairing a subcommittee. Did you look at, again, just like Senator Ringo, I'm no expert, but I've heard of a coastal town in New England where they've set up a large marine reserve, and it literally turned a dying fishing industry around, and it's a very thriving industry. And there was an interview with several, both fishermen's wives, and others in that community about the effect of that reserve nearby. They were talking about everything from the size of the fish, big fish create laying a lot more eggs, and fishing improving around the edge of the nursery and all of that. Was that a, like you said, 20-year-old or more than 20-year-old nursery? Or?
Well, a lot of the species, I'm not familiar with that particular reserve that you're speaking of. I know that in New England there has been some areas that have been set aside in sort of a rotational, in the sense that people rotate crops. They have sections of the Grand Banks that have been partitioned off and closed to all fishing for periods of 5-10 years, and then reopened and had some fantastic success with that method. But I'm not particularly aware of the reserve you spoke of, but my suspicion is that it probably was a fairly long time. A lot of the species, rockfish that grow to be large size are fairly long-lived fish and take a long time. Our rockfish, for example, don't even reach maturity for 10 years. So in order to see any results, we would need to conduct a test that would take quite some time to check its effectiveness.
Follow up.
Senator Shields, please proceed.
And if you were involved in such an experiment, you'd be willing to stick with it until you actually had mature fish, the ones that lay lots of eggs, rather than just a few living within that nursery.
Absolutely, Senator Shields. I'd be, in fact, during the last OPAC, I recommended that we set aside some trial areas, and fortunately, the committee couldn't come to an agreement on what the size of those should be. But I do believe that any kind of a test needs to be a long term. We need to set something aside and just isolate it for a long period of time to see its effectiveness. However, one of the things that we must remember is that any kind of reserve, in order to be effective, has to have fishing industry buy-in. And if you set aside too large of an area, it would be very difficult to enforce, and it would be difficult to get the fleet to buy into that concept. So we need to use some good rational thinking in creating areas that can be enforced, that can be tested to see their effectiveness.
One more follow-up.
Sure, Senator Shields.
What kind of science do they use to determine the size of a reserve?
Well,
or is it just kind of by guess and by golly? I don't understand.
I guess I'd have to be honest and say I'm not fully aware of all the science that would go into determining a size. I know that in some cases reserves have been as small as around a certain pinnacle off the town of Edmonds, Washington. And that, in the case of that particular reserve, it was set up sort of as a dive place so scuba divers could observe fish, and it was kind of agreed that this would be a no-take reserve. And what they found in that particular place was the fish grew very large, but they had one species that dominated all the others and actually ended up driving out their fish. And so in that case, it was a very, very small reserve. I would think we just have to have scientists advise us on what would be an appropriate size to achieve a good sample.
Thank you for your responses.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Next we have Ms. Robin Hartman, I believe, is in the room. Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Robin Hartman. I'm from Roseburg, and I would like to be considered for the Ocean Policy Advisory Council in the coastal environmental slot. I'm interested in serving on OPAC because I care deeply about the ocean, which is kind of an unintended pun. But I also enjoy working with stakeholder groups. I serve on the board of Oregon Shores Conservation Coalition and have since 1997. Oregon Shores has over 1,100 mile adopters who have adopted a mile of Oregon coastline, and so we're real connected to the coast. In working for Oregon Shores, I've learned a lot about how OPAC formed and the changes that have come over the last few years. I also serve as part-time executive director for the North Umpqua Foundation, which is a river and fish restoration group out of Roseburg. I bring that knowledge of fisheries and the river and that land-sea connection to OPAC. I come from a diving family. I was fortunate to have parents who dove during the era of Jacques Cousteau, and I've dove in a number of reserves or similar areas to reserves in Hood Canal. I've dove in Port Orford and Florence and Newport and in the tropics, and have seen what difference a reserve can make to the habitat underwater. I have had a broad background. I've worked for the timber industry. I've worked for Congress. I've worked for the state. I've worked for conservation groups. And it gets all confused here, but it does help me see different perspectives. And with that, I'd just like to say I'd be interested in working on OPAC.
No, just thank you.
Mm-hmm. Senator Linko, any questions? I just wanted to say thanks for your willingness to serve. So we really appreciate. I know you've been on the list for a while. So
okay,
thanks.
Thank you.
We've got a couple other folks in the audience. I'm going to go to the Workforce Investment Board and bring up Carl Califano and James Paulson. And while they're coming up, I just wanted to make a couple of comments, and some of my colleagues may wish to join in. We started a few weeks ago asking folks who wanted to be on boards and commissions to come before the Senate Rules Committee before we approved their appointments. I think we just wanted to get a better sense of who was getting appointed. And I just have to say, from my perspective, I'm extremely impressed by the breadth and the depth of folks' interest and knowledge on these issues and your willingness to serve the state at no cost. And it really gives us a better feel for who's out there setting, in some cases, policy. And we really appreciate your willingness to serve. For folks that have already testified, feel free to leave at this point in time. We're going to let these appointments sit for a week, and we'll come back next week, and assuming their votes on the committee, we'll move forward on them. I think it's fair to say, unless you hear from us, probably you're okay, but we just really appreciate your willingness to come down, up, across, wherever you came from to join us this morning. Good morning. Thank you. Welcome. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first. Hi, my name's James Paulson, and I work for Kaiser Permanente up in Portland, Oregon. I'm a native Oregonian, grew up in Portland, Oregon, and I do have a lot of metal in my teeth, so just for that fluoride question. In my role at Kaiser Permanente, I'm responsible for recruitment for this Northwest region, and everyone's pretty aware of the challenges that we face around getting qualified healthcare professionals in the field and clinicians. So working on the Oregon Workforce Investment Board is a great opportunity to look at ways in which we can develop our workforce to better serve our state. I'm very passionate about the state in which I'm from. And I think that on this OWIB, I would bring not only my knowledge of the state, but as well, I serve as the vice chair on the Region 2 Workforce Investment Board, which is Multnomah, Washington County, and the city of Portland. And so I think with that relationship, as well as my relationship as the chair of the workforce group of all the healthcare providers in the Portland metro area, I think that I would bring a voice of healthcare as well as knowledge to that board.
Great. Thank you. Mr. Califano?
Yes. Chair Brown and members of the committee, my name is Carl Califano. I'm the Vice President of Operations at ATI Huacheng in Albany. And we're a manufacturer of special metals. As we look into the future in here, we are a global competitor. Over 40% of the product that we produce is for export. And so as such, we compete globally. And so we recognize that if indeed we are going to compete in a global marketplace with global competitors, we will do that on the strength of our workforce. That's what will distinguish us and give us the ability to compete. So obviously both the manufacturers in the area, the business people in the area, and the state of Oregon have a very vested interest in determining how we prepare our workforce so that we're able to compete globally, provide the kinds of living wage employment that we want in the state. That's good for us. And so that's really the centerpiece of my desire to serve on this board, is to join in and to form a partnership between the manufacturers in the area and the state policymakers in how we prepare our citizens and our workforce going forward into a very competitive environment.
Thank you. Mr. Paulson, healthcare is obviously a critical need for all of us as citizens, but I also see it sort of as an important tool in terms of economic development. Could you talk a little bit about that and what you see the role of OHSU in helping us meet the demands?
I think that OHSU is only one small component in the bigger healthcare conversation around developing the workforce. I think that when we talk about developing the workforce needs, a lot of people talk about nursing and doctors. Those are two critical areas, but there's a lot of areas in the technical, like the imaging techs, the respiratory techs, the physical therapists, pharmacists, and so forth, that also play key roles in healthcare. So I think that the conversation is much bigger than one university. It's really much more a linking between all the different schools, both university and the community college level, and finding ways that we can create better access for students to come in, go through those programs, and then link them up with healthcare organizations. And I think as far as the link between healthcare organizations and economic development, I think that there is a stronger link, because for Kaiser Permanente, with economic development and job growth means that there is more growth for our industry, more members, and we're definitely interested in growing our membership, because a stronger membership base means that we're able to deliver healthcare at a lower cost for everyone.
Great. Any further questions? Thank you both very much. We appreciate your willingness to join us today. Last but not least, I believe Mr. Anahusi, is it right?
Good morning. Thanks for making the trip up.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Anno Husing. I am the director of the Oregon Coastal Zone Management Association, and our offices are in Newport. We work for a coalition of cities, counties, ports, soil and water conservation districts up and down the Oregon coast, and the Coquille Indian Tribe. So I would be happy to go into my very long and torturous career in marine policy, but I suspect you may have some questions you'd rather direct to me than...
I think we'd like to just hear a little bit from you about why you'd like to serve on this council.
Why I'd want to serve on the council? I did serve on the Ocean Policy Advisory Council from 1996 when I became the OCZMA director. In law school, in fact, when I came to Oregon, I worked on the original Territorial Sea Management Plan, which did create the legislation that then Senator Bradbury initiated in the Capitol to create the task force that led to this whole thing. But really what I'm most interested in is helping to strike a balance between the socioeconomic needs of the communities and the resource. And I think, of course, that is the central challenge before us. Many people in local governments are prepared to sit down and have a constructive discussion on marine reserves. I will tell you, though, that the impasse that's occurred over the last couple of years really boils down to something very fundamental. Many people that are concerned about the people that make a living from the sea are concerned that an effort to create marine reserves within territorial waters will go too far, that it's never enough, how much of the ocean will be put aside for those purposes. And on the other hand, there has been a feeling among the conservation community that we're really not serious about sitting down and creating some kind of a network of marine reserves from 0 to 3 miles. I would point out that there's an enormous rockfish conservation area established by the federal government. I think we've clearly turned the corner on marine reserves in terms of we're ready to sit down and have a dialogue now if you get this slate of OPAC nominees going. I would like to endorse all the other people that are on the slate of nominees that are going forward with OPAC. Senator Shields, I know you know former Representative Thompson, current County Commissioner Terry Thompson. I think Terry is going to make a tremendous contribution to OPAC, because there are few people that know the real estate out there that we're talking about better than Terry. And so I think really we've got a group of people that are uniquely qualified to sit down and make some progress on this area. But again, it's my desire to see the anger and frustration from this whole issue be finally drained out and see if we can't move forward. I'll just close my opening remarks by saying, while we all agree that we're going forward and having this discussion, I'm predicting there's going to be some tough sledding ahead. You know, the devil will be in the detail, as you all know, whenever you do anything in this building. It's going to be the same way with OPAC, you know, and I think we're prepared to go forward. But it's going to be hard. It's going to be hard to look certain communities in the eye and certain people in the eye and say, you know what, those places that you've been going to harvest these resources all these years are no longer available to you. This is always a difficult thing to go through, but we're prepared to roll up our sleeves and get that job done.
Thank you. Senator Shields, any questions?
Yeah, just thank you.
There's a little bill. It's actually in Senator Ringo's committee, so I wish he was here. I think the bill number is 734, allows or requires the state to establish marine reserve parks. What are your thoughts on us as a state legislature sort of taking a proactive approach on an issue like that?
Well, we're ready to take a proactive approach now. We have said, people on from the local perspective, both our state representatives, our county, many of our county commissioners, that we're ready to sit down and move forward on this issue. We frankly, and I hope this doesn't impact my potential placement on the committee, but I oppose the bill. And I was a little frustrated with my friends in the environmental community. And I say friends because, Paul Engelmeyer, a number of people, I sit down and talk with these folks regularly. I like and respect them, but we were never consulted on the bill. We just had a discussion about the bill at our Oregon Coastal Zone Management Association meeting last week. Senator Johnson attended. And of a spectrum of people from our side of the equation said, we are ready to go forward, and that we would have appreciated if we had been consulted about the bill. And we had several people from the conservation community there, Robin Hartman in particular, who's here today, but others, Peg Regan and Samantha Murray from Portland Audubon. And they said, the bill was dropped at a time that their own suspicion of our motives in terms of being serious about getting OPAC going again and having this conversation was at its height. And that I detect a tremendous thawing in the relationship between the conservation community and the local communities that care about this. And so I think the bill is frankly unwise and unnecessary at this time. And I said with Senator Johnson right there in the room as well that I have to use a certain amount of patience because I've been around this marine policy business since 1976. And I've been kind of like a Forrest Gump where I've had the opportunity to be at various historic points in time in marine policy. I have an ocean and coastal law certificate from the University of Oregon's law school. So I'm immersed in this stuff. I see a very clear path ahead for how to establish marine reserves under Oregon law after we have a discussion through OPAC. You go through the various commissions and you work through it. So to me, I see as like a halfback open field running on how to do it. We just need to get down there and do it now. Other people, and I understand this, that have not had as much experience and background as I have, don't see an open field. They see kind of a thicket, or they don't quite know how to get there, and so I think there was there was some frustration. It's been quite a soap opera in the last few years, this whole thing over the Ocean Policy Advisory Committee, as you know. So, we're ready to sit down. We're going to sit down in good faith. And what we came up at the meeting is, if we show that if there is some kind of measure of obstructionism on the part of the reconstituted Ocean Policy Advisory Council, there's absolutely nothing stopping a minority coalition from that group of going forward, going to the Fish and Wildlife Commission, asking them to adopt closures for marine fisheries, going to the Department of Environmental Quality, asking them to adopt closures for areas that would no longer be available for discharges into the water column, because DEQ and the Department of Environmental Quality Commission covers that. And they can go to the State Land Board and ask for a prohibition against further activities that relate to the seabed. So, again, I've settled down since I heard the bill was dropped because I was, not consulted in advance, even though I had initiated some dialogues with the environmental community. So I was disappointed about that. But I do recognize that maybe not everybody sees these issues quite as clearly as I do because I've been around it for a long time. So that's a long-winded answer to a very short question. But I hope that you really sense from the overall context of my remarks that I'm approaching this issue from a very constructive point of view, and I'm predicting there's going to be some major successes in the next year or two. But there's one thing that we have to keep in mind is that some of the people in the coastal communities, the fishing industry has really had its back pushed against the wall in the last number of years. We finally bottomed out. We've got the buyback program that we helped initiate. It took hold. We have enormous closures from trawl areas. If you just could understand how environmentally sensitive fisheries management is these days, and I'm certainly not going to dispute that there isn't some more business that we can attend to in the near shore area, but let us give us 2 years to work that through. And I think we're going to, you know, we'll make a report, we'll come back. If there are any jurisdictional issues with the that I haven't encountered in terms of how to get to a marine reserve in the nearshore area, we can address them through OPAC and come back to you in a year or two and address those. But I think 2 years from now we'll be sitting here and saying we'll have a bunch of maps on the wall but you know, the big issue has always been funding of these things. It's very easy to write diagrams on the wall saying this area is closed and that area is closed, but if we don't have the research, if we don't have the enforcement, and most importantly, if we don't have the buy-in from the local communities, there are some people out there that are going to go out there and they're going to get into those marine reserves and they're going to completely undo them. And, you know, they're people have joked, not joked, but said some, even mentioned sabotage, you know. I remember in some situations that there have been, you know, when that issue has even been brought up in the past, and some people that don't quite know a lot of these people on the coast and what they're like, this is some of the last vestiges of the West out there. And when you mention that some people might even do some really, you know, counterproductive things out there, that was met with this feeling that they wouldn't do that. Well, you know, people when they're angry and mad do a lot of very strange things, and so I really think we need to go forward with this in a deliberative manner now. But my own feelings are let's go forward with OPAC. Let's roll up our sleeves and let's get this job done. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions? Senator Ringo.
Well, I'm sorry I missed part of your testimony. It sounded like you were a pretty outspoken opponent of marine reserves. Is that
Senator Ringo? No, if you had caught my entire testimony, you would have certainly not come away with that impression, right? If you had snipped off the last piece of it as you came in, you might be led to that conclusion. But this much of what I said was conciliatory and highly constructive, and that last end was playing upon the frustration that the bill was dropped at a time when there was really at the height of the feeling from the environmental community that and I say local interests broadly, can't represent everybody on the Oregon coast feelings, but there was a feeling in November when the bill was dropped, and we learned that from the conversation with our friends from the environmental community, that was the height of their feeling that we weren't really ready to get, that we were going to stonewall OPAC, not get it forward, somehow, you know, drag our feet, and that things weren't going to go forward. We had a conversation about this last week in Salem at our OCZMA meeting. Senator Johnson was right there. And so we had members of the environmental community in the room. We watched the movie Common Ground. We all agreed we're going to go forward. People like Representative Wayne Krieger said publicly and privately, we're going forward. I've said it, we're going forward. Let's just get OPAC going and we're going to address this marine reserve issue head on. We've said it publicly. We've said it privately. Let's just get out of the way. And I've endorsed all the other people that are proposed to be served on OPAC. So we're ready to go, and that's my message to you, Senator. We're gonna do something constructive on marine reserves. We don't need the bill. And there were even comments made by some of the members of the environmental community at our meeting that the bill was meant to generate a further discussion. We've had to, you know, manage the message back home because we have been telling our people back home we're ready to sit down, and all of a sudden the bill gets dropped, and it. To me, it, one of the major mistakes in the bill is that it said state parks would be authorized to establish marine reserves. There's no staffing or expertise at state parks. I said before you came in that I see a very, because of my background, and I have a long background in marine policy, and that the path to establishing marine reserves within territorial waters of the state of Oregon within 0 to 3 miles is abundantly clear to me how to get there. And we can get there through OPAC, and even if you had the voting membership, everyone's been hung up on voting membership at OPAC. If if there's obstruction on our side, and I say loosely the local coalition, then I've invited our friends in the environmental community to think about having a minority report and go right to the Fish and Wildlife Commission and ask for a fishery closure. They have authority under Oregon law to initiate a fishery closure for fisheries management. Go to DEQ and go to the Environmental Quality Commission and ask for a closure on further permitting of discharges in the territorial sea for, let's say, that same area. And go to the State Land Board and Division of State Lands and ask for a closure for any potential leasing for whatever that areas of the seabed should be. So I got frustrated when I first heard the bill came out. I'm repeating my testimony, but I'm doing it for your benefit because I know you're a key player in how the bill's going to be played out in the Senate. I think there's a very clear path of how to get there right now. We really don't need the bill. Statements that were made during the meeting just last week in front of Senator Johnson were to the effect that, you know, the bill was launched at a time when our motives, meaning the local motives, were at the suspicion that we weren't serious about doing something with that was at its height. And there were also comments that the bill was meant to generate further discussion about marine reserves. That and the Common Ground movie have done that. I say let's just go forward and roll up our sleeves and get the job done. So thank you. I hope that makes you understand my position more clearly.
Madam Chair,
Senator Ringo,
there's been great reductions in the availability of fish for harvesting off our shores. I mean,
correct.
Am I correct on that? I mean,
yes.
I've heard the word collapse. Is that an accurate term? There's part of the fisheries are really in a state of collapse.
You're asking complicated, simple questions about very complicated issues, but let me very quickly try to explain. In 1996, the U.S. Congress fundamentally changed the nature of marine management, fisheries management in the United States. No longer are the needs of the communities weighed with the needs of the resource. After the true collapse of fisheries in New England and elsewhere, in 1996, Congress said, no more, we're going to subordinate the needs.
But what about our coasts?
I think our coasts are, well, I'm just saying, right now, we operate in a fisheries management regime that puts the needs of the resources squarely first. We have some rockfish populations. We've learned in the early 90s that they're slow growing. They don't reproduce very quickly. Those were the major messages of the Common Ground movie as well. But we have a number of other fisheries that the fleet has changed. It's gone through that tough transition. We've moved away from the long-lived ground fish, and we're making a living now much more on these other species that are more available for fisheries because they literally reproduce like insects. They have short lifespans. You know, chinook salmon has a complete generational change in 4 to 5 years. Dungeness crab reproduces each year. Shrimp, albacore tuna, all these other species that have now become the backbone of the industry are really the kind of fisheries that you look and they're poster children for, yeah, this is what you ought to have your major fisheries on.
Speaking, Madam Chair, really my question was whether collapse is the right term.
I think it's overstated.
Okay. I mean, the dramatic reduction in the fish available for harvest. You're fine with that term.
Absolutely, well, yeah, primarily because of management thing, and some of those rockfish stocks were fished down, and we need to protect them, and they're being protected now. Please.
Just follow up, please. Sure. And the reason for the dramatic reduction of fish available for harvest was over-harvesting by the industry. Isn't that fair?
It was a...
Over-harvesting.
It was a liberal fisheries management regime that predated the 1996 Act and the changes that occurred in 1998. I have fully endorsed the changes that Congress put into place. I think we made the mid-course correction in those fisheries in time. What I see right now is just a little further mop-up that needs to happen in the near shore of creating some additional rockfish reserves. I think we're there. And if Mark Hickson was sitting down right here, I asked him, he's from Oregon State University, I asked him, I said, Mark, don't you think the rockfish are going to be just fine with the kind of new, modern management that we have in place? He goes, oh, yeah. I just worry they're going to rebound and then we go back to the old days. I don't see that happening. I work for a lot of conservatives, Senator Ringo, and not one of them have, thank God, have ever come to me and asked me to go to Senator Smith and ask to roll back the changes in the 1996 Act. We all recognize we're dealing in a different era now. The issue is what additional benefits can we gain by establishing some closures in the near shore, and we won't go out of our way to bankrupt anybody. I'll leave with you, if you'd like to read it, the resolution that OCZMA came up with in January 2002 that had a profound influence on what the OPAC recommendation was in August 2002. And you'll see in there, even from this, you'll see that we're ready to sit down and have a dialogue on these issues. And you know what? I think a lot of members in the conservation community think we're ready to do that, too. I see the chair is laughing. Her patience is fairly exhausted at this point.
No. We just got a number of folks waiting to have us call them by phone, and so we're worried they're going to take off and go do something else. So
something productive.
Secretary Ollie.
Thanks, Madam Chairman.
Did you have a speech or a question from Mr. Husing? Great. We make him brief, please.
Can I make
Thank you.
First? Yes, you may, Senator. This discussion has elicited in me a fine sense of deja vu. And I'm just impressed by the idea that drawing circles on maps has worked so well in the National Forest that we're about to do it on the ocean floor. Drawing circles on maps seldom, if ever, results in any sustainable management regime. But the two pieces of wisdom that I did hear this morning are, one, there are very many mechanisms to manage the recovery of fish species off the Oregon coast. And that's a good thing because we're going to need them all. Marine reserves might be a mechanism that we employ. Changing in the harvest patterns, seasons, availability, fisheries management might be other mechanisms that we will employ. So I think those things at least give me confidence that we have a lot of tools in the toolbox. There is no right answer, because every situation will have to be looked at individually. And I'm glad that there will be membership on this commission that will look at all of the different ranges of opportunities and help people come up with a system that works. To me, it seems like one of the things that the legislature is really good at is arriving at the answer before it's fully formed with the question. I think what we're seeing is that there are people that believed that folks of goodwill would never coalesce around an issue and couldn't be trusted. They got frustrated. And what we're seeing, I believe, with the bill that we have in the legislature is the triumph of the short attention span. People want an answer. Act first, worry about the science later. Jam the ball, pull the trigger, and sort out the science afterwards. I hope that doesn't happen. And I hope what happens is that we create a thoughtful process in this venue with this commission and let those folks work out the issue in a venue that will attract the right science and create the venue and the forum for having the right discussions. I do agree that we've been through a process of demonization, demonizing miners. We didn't say mine the ocean. That's how effective the demonization of miners has become. Demonize the logger, and now we're demonizing the fisherman. Over-harvesting. You can use the term interchangeably with anything that we do in nature. I just hope we don't rush ahead with a situation that precludes thoughtful consideration by this commission about what we ought to do to manage the offshore fisheries. So I was pleased by your testimony and some of the other testimony I heard here today. I'm very happy to offer my support to all the members, all the nominees here this morning, because I think only through putting that diversity of opinion in one room will we ever get closer to the answers that we need. That was my statement, Madam Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Farriola.
I have no questions for this witness.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Ringo, if you'd like to continue our dialogue in your office some other time or in other settings, I'd be happy to do that.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Ringo.
I mean, to tell you the truth, I had a number of questions, but your answers were all long speeches. I mean, I was hoping to have a dialogue, and I didn't feel like we had a dialogue. You know, my understanding is the National Academy of Sciences came out with a hard recommendation saying we need marine reserves. That was a science-based recommendation. And I would be glad to include a dialogue. From my perspective, it needs to be an even interchange. Is that
absolutely, Senator Ringo? Again, thank you. We're not against marine reserves. We're going to go ahead and we're going to have a serious dialogue and make something positive happen. I promise you.
Thank you.
Mr. Hughes and Senator Ringo, I'd ask that you guys continue your conversation later. We're going to contact our nominee for the Board of Medical Examiners, and then we will move into work session on last week's executive appointments and bill introductions. I know Mr. Charbonnet is in the room and Mr. Savage in the room. We'll get to you as quickly as we can. We understand you have busy schedules.
Kirkpatrick.
Is this Dr. Kirkpatrick?
Yes.
Hi, this is Senator Kate Brown. How are you this morning?
Good morning. Fine, thank you.
Thank you. I have in front of me myself, Senator Ted Farriola, Senator Frank Shields, Senator Charlie Ringo, and Senator Jason Atkinson, and we had a room full of folks. We would just ask you to state your name for the record and explain why you would like to be on the Oregon Board of Medical Examiners.
Thank you, and good morning. My name is Douglas Kirkpatrick, M.D. I'm from Medford. And indeed, I really am interested in serving on the Board of Medical Examiners. I'll tell you why. I've practiced medicine in Oregon since 1990, and I've grown to love the quality of life here in Oregon and to appreciate the quality of medicine in Oregon. Mm. Now, basically, I want to give back to the community by working on the board and helping to maintain the high quality of health care that I see here. In terms of qualifications, I practice medicine overall for a total of 26 years. I have a good amount of experience working with other physicians, and I've seen how they manage, for the most part, to cope with the pressures they work under. I've personally seen many physicians adhere to the highest standards of professional conduct, and I've witnessed a few fail to do so. I've personally been tempted by financial and emotional pressures to take shortcuts or do the wrong thing. And I think I have a pretty good perspective on what other physicians face on a day-to-day, year-in, year-out basis. I'm also a member of numerous state and national medical and neurosurgical societies, and I've met and discussed issues with many other physicians around the state, region, and country, which I think gives me some broad geographic perspective on healthcare here in Oregon and elsewhere. My career in neurosurgery has necessarily entailed years of working with patients suffering from devastating conditions, such as paralysis, coma, vegetative state, brain death, and so forth, and then counseling their families. Mm. I also have a long interest in ethics. Some years ago, I published a paper on ethical standards in neurosurgery, and I've lectured on bioethics to community groups. I think basically all of this helps give me some perspective and judgment in my work that I could do for the board.
Thank you, Dr. Kirkpatrick. One of the roles of the Board of Medical Examiners that I see is to protect patients. How do you see the board's role in terms of responding to patient or client complaints?
Well, obviously, this is a very important role. Initially, the board licenses practitioners for Oregon, but then it has to continue and evaluate all complaints and charges against practitioners in Oregon, taking them very seriously, because the responsibility doesn't just end once the license is issued. There's an ongoing need to maintain the standards by maintaining the vigilance and evaluating and investigating very thoroughly any allegations or charges from anyone, anytime, anywhere with respect to any practitioner in Oregon.
Thank you. Are there any further questions from the committee? Senator Shields.
Well, thank you, Doctor, for joining us by phone this morning. I chair a committee in the Senate that has a charge of taking a look at the State Industrial Accident Insurance Fund. Of course, injured workers are part of those patients that you're talking about. Could you give us just a perspective on how you see independent medical examiners working out there in the field?
I'm sorry, there was a cough. I didn't hear the last part of the sentence.
I said, could you give us a little bit of reflection, and maybe the cough was the right thing, I don't know, on how independent medical examiners are working within the context of workers' comp generally and the State Industrial Accident Insurance Fund?
That's a complex issue. I think IMEs or independent medical examiners perform several roles. Obviously, there's a need for someone outside the immediate context of an injured worker to look at the situation and try to assess objectively what happened and what didn't and what to what extent something can be done or should be done appropriately. I think, frankly, sometimes the IME is not totally independent, and I think it's a complex issue, but I think it's a good middle ground between the immediate practitioner in the field, in the trench, so to speak, and the injured worker, and then with SAFE itself and the board oversee both to try to reach what seems to be an equitable and valid objective assessment of the injured worker.
Follow up.
Senator Shields.
I realize my questions are somewhat complex and probably wouldn't have wanted to have spent the last year and a half as I have studying the issue. You'd find it rather boring, maybe. But I actually came up with an idea at one point, which we have since abandoned, of actually having the Board of Medical Examiners certify as to the independence of what's supposed to be an independent medical examiner. Having moved away from that, I'm a little disturbed when I find that insurance companies are the ones that are paying for the quote-unquote independent medical examiner.
Right.
How do you feel about that?
Well, that's one of the reasons I think I share your concern. I don't think it's a major problem, but it's certainly a potential problem. And that's why I kind of hedged and made the statement that I'm not sure that they are always totally independent. And I think there may be a role for either the board or some other group to assess and certify these people doing the IMEs to make sure they are, in fact, totally independent. But I hate to make an overall commitment in that area. I haven't given a lot of thought, but I think there's reason for some concern there.
Well, I appreciate your thought process. There's no reason why you would have to come to a conclusion on such short notice, but I appreciate the way you've thought through the question. Thank you.
Any further questions from committee? Dr. Kirkpatrick, we'll let you get back to work or retirement, whichever you're enjoying most. We really very much appreciate your willingness to serve on the Board of Medical Examiners. We are going to let these appointments sit until next week, and then the committee will proceed to work session. So thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Chair Brown and members of the committee.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Okay, chair moves into work session on executive appointments. The chair would move en bloc the State Parks and Recreation Commission appointments of James Brown, Sharon Rudy, and William Gregory. Any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Senator Ferrioli, do you wish to carry?
Sure.
Okay. In work session on executive appointments, the chair would move the Quality Education Commission and Black members Lynn Lundquist, Lorenzo Pohl, Susan Massey, and Yvonne Curtis. Any discussion? Any objection?
Madam Chairman.
Senator Atkinson? Senator Ferrioli?
I'll defer to Senator Atkinson, and then I will ask under the order of discussion.
Senator Atkinson?
I object to all
okay.
Four in block.
All right.
Madam Chairman, I object to the Quality Education Commission.
Okay.
I don't care who you appoint to it.
All right.
I think it's a fine exercise. It's produced no usable product for the state of Oregon to date. I anticipate that will be its future. So I'll be voting no on all the appointments.
Thank you. Any further discussion?
I will save the rest of my comments for
when
better
feeling
health
better. Yes.
On the floor.
All right. Senator Atkinson and Senator Ferrioli be recorded as no votes. Anybody else? Good. Motion carries. Senator Shields, would you like to carry? Because we like to have people carry them that support the measures. Open a work session on the Oregon Criminal Justice Commission. Any discussion?
Any block?
In block. Thank you. Any objections to Joshua Marquis and Eva Temple to the Oregon Criminal Justice Commission? Hearing and seeing none, motion carries. The chair will carry those appointments.
Good choice, Madam Chair.
The chair opens a work session on the State Fish and Wildlife Commission and the in-block appointment, Senator Atkinson, of Zane Smith. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Hearing and seeing none, motion passes. Who would like to carry? Senator Ringo, thanks for volunteering this morning.
Good eye contact, you lose.
Chair opens a work session on Health Services Commission and moves in block the appointments of Lita Garside and Brian Soule. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing and seeing none, motion carries. Who would like to carry? Nobody's now even looking at me. Senator Shields, you did. You win. Thank you for volunteering. Open a work session on the Physical Therapist Licensing Board. The chair moves in block Cindy Cunningham and Charles Moore. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing and seeing none, motion carries. Who would like to carry? Senator Ferrioli, thanks for volunteering. And open a work session on the State Board of Tax Practitioners, Michael Addington and Donna Gilmore. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing and seeing none, motion carries. Senator Atkinson, will you please carry? We hope you'll feel better by then. Okay, any further executive appointment work sessions? Hearing and seeing none, close that work session. We're going to open a work session on bill drafting requests and introduction of LC drafts. The chair would move the following requests for drafting and by legislative council and introduction as committee bills. And yes, your vote in favor of them does not signify your support or opposition to a measure, and you have my commitment that these bills will not delay the end of session. Number one, from the chair, a bill to expand the membership of the emergency board to include 10 senators and 10 representatives. Number two, from the chair, a redraft of House Bill 3417, 2003, relating to urban renewal. Number three, from the chair, a redraft of House Bill 2552, 2005, relating to humane special agents. Number four, from Senator Westland, a bill to create a statutory work group on the Oregon Health Plan. Number five, from the governor, a bill to add juveniles to the jurisdiction of the Psychiatric Security Review Board. And number six, from the Senate President, a bill establishing a maximum ending balance for school district budgeting. Any discussion? Those were six and seven. Five, six, and seven. Any discussion? Any objection? It's so ordered. The chair would move, we're still in work session on bill drafting and introduction requests. The chair would move the following LC drafts for introduction as committee measures. LC 3471 relating to water systems. LC 3479 proposes amendment to Oregon Constitution establishing panel of special masters to create state legislative redistricting plan. LC 3479 proposes alternative amendment to Oregon Constitution establishing panel of special masters to create state legislative redistricting plan, LC 3514 relating to school finance declaring emergency, LC 3532 urging Congress to commit to repayment of Social Security trust fund monies and reform Social Security, LC 3537 relating to siting of destination resorts, and LC 3546 relating to juveniles. Any discussion?
What are those redistricting ones again?
They are two. They're relating to creating a statewide redistricting plan that would follow the federal decennial census. Do you need some more information?
Yeah, I do.
And what more information do you need?
Just introduce them, but I have a...
Okay, we will be having conversations about them later.
All right.
Again, your vote in favor of the motion does not indicate your support or opposition to the measures, and your vote will not delay the end of session. Any further discussion? Any opposition to the motion? Hearing and seeing none, motion passes. Thank you very much for your cooperation and your courtesies. Mr. Charbonnet, why don't you come on up? We're going to open a work session on executive appointments, and this must be the TSPC, Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. And welcome, and it's great to see you. Sorry to keep you waiting so long.
Yeah, that's all right. Chair Brown and members of the committee, I've been appointed by the governor to TSPC, and I would be following Jennifer Heiss and Carolyn Ortman, who are both past presidents of OSBA, since the Oregon statute specifies that one school board member should be on the commission. And that would be my role if my appointment is confirmed. I've been a school board member for 25 years. and I'm on my sixth year on the board of directors of OSBA. Therefore, I've been very closely involved with schools for a number of years. And I've come to appreciate that TSPC plays an essential role in ensuring that school districts have continued to have the great teachers, highly qualified and dedicated, that we need for student achievement. And I'm particularly interested in participating in the work of the Commission because of two of its main functions. The first one is to make sure that TSPC sets the standards for the number of education departments or schools of education that we have in the state. And education is a very dynamic field, constantly new research and teaching strategies are introduced, and I think it's very important that the schools of education give adequate training to student teachers, future teachers, so that indeed they can be well familiar with current research. I think the other, even more important function of TSPC is to set the standards and requirements for issuing licenses with a multiplicity of endorsements. Even more important is setting the requirements for renewing licenses so that we can make sure that teachers through a long career really remain qualified and with a mastery of the subjects that they teach. And what I would bring as one school board member in a commission that has 14 career and distinguished career educators is the perspective of a person who in education has been on the management side rather than the teaching side, and in a career in private sector high-tech companies. I've had, you know, the role or responsibility of guiding and helping talented engineers and scientists in achieving enhancing their performance and achieving success. And I think that with this different experience and background, I might be able to offer a useful insight on TSPC. And these are the main reasons why I would like to be.
Thank you, Dr. Charbonnet. I was I knew I'd seen you somewhere before, and I didn't. So I was surprised when you were only a new appointment to the TSPC. But it's your work with the school boards that I'm sure that I remember you from. So we really appreciate, with your wealth of experience, your willingness to serve. Any questions on the committee? I think you wowed them. So
left us speechless.
Yes. Thank you very much, Dr. Charbonnet.
Thank you very much.
And because we have a legislator waiting, I'm sorry, Mr. Savage, I'm going to open a public hearing on the Oregon Marine Board and invite Representative Arnie Robline to come forward, and we're going to try and reach Mr. George Tinker.
One of them. It's very confusing.
Representative Robon, do you want to go ahead and make your remarks while we're getting a hold of Mr. Tinker, if we can?
For the record, my name is Arnie Roblin, state representative.
Mr. Tinker?
Yes.
This is Kate Brown. I've got Representative Roblin here at the dais, so if you don't mind, we'd like to have him testify, and then we'll pull you up.
Okay.
For the record, my name is Arnie Roblin, a state representative from House District 9 in Coos Bay. And it is really a privilege, Madam Speaker and committee, to be able to sit here and comment on George Tinker's appointment to the Marine Board. George was a biology teacher at Marshfield High School. I was principal, and we worked together for the 32 years that I was there. He was there before I arrived. He was a member of the Southland Sanctuary Board for a number of years. And George is one of those people who commits his time to important issues. He has trained hundreds of students in our area with regard to boat safety at the local yacht club. He trained kids in sailing activities and other kinds of stuff. The oceanography class that he taught navigation and a number of other issues. And George cares intimately about those things that he commits to. I am convinced that he will be one of those board members that other people will look up to over time because of his study. He will study the issues. He'll make sure that he's informed. And he will take action when appropriate. So I can't think of anyone in our community who would be more appropriate for appointment to the Marine Board. So if you have any questions, I stand here ready. I've
Great.
Been in Georgia for a long time.
Thank you, Representative Robine. We appreciate your patience in waiting for us to get to this appointment. I also note for the record that Senator Joanne Verger is extremely supportive of this appointment as well. Any questions for Representative Robine? Thanks for joining us. You're welcome to stay.
Okay.
Mr. Tinker, welcome.
Thank you.
At the dais, I have Senator Farioli and Senator Shields and myself. Just want you to give a little bit of information about yourself and explain why you want to participate on the Marine Board.
Okay. So my name is George Tinker, and I live in Coos Bay. And my interest in the State Marine Board go back a ways by way of my involvement. I've been teaching oceanography at Marshfield High School for a large number of years and recently retired. And with that, I've taught the boater education course to Marshfield students as a part of that. My also involvement is teaching sailing to local area youth on a volunteer basis, and I've been doing that for some 20-something years. So I'm interested in just general public safety and marine safety issues that make for a safe boating public. And now in my very recent retirement, I have the time to contribute more to that in the community. I've recently been on the, just coming off the South Slough Reserve Management Commission, so I have 20-something years of service as a volunteer on a state commission that's a part of the State Land Board. And so that will be coming to a conclusion here soon, and so I was looking forward to serving in another direction that I have some interest in.
Thank you. Mr. Tinker, we appreciate your willingness to serve. One of the issues that we're going to be wrestling with this session is whether or not to proceed with a bill that would create a recreational right of use on Oregon's navigable waterways. One of the things the bill does is add a fee onto non-motorized craft. The concern has been expressed to me that there are no non-motorized advocates on the Marine Board. Could you tell us a little bit about the boater education cord and your work with students? I assume it was all in the sailing arena.
Well, by definition, I think sailing is a non-motorized vehicle.
That's
on the
right.
Water.
I know at times it's not.
That's been my involvement with teaching youth and myself in sailboat racing up to 10 Mile Lake. So I recognize the non-motorized uses that occur. In earlier years, I was also involved with drift boating on rogue river areas, so I've well experienced with that area of drift boats. As far as the issues coming along, well, I think I would need to further study them and hear some of the issues on both sides of that to come to a conclusion or a voting conclusion. But I'm well experienced in the non-motorized uses, except not in kayaking or canoeing.
Okay. And that was going to be my next question, given your involvement with the South Slough estuary. So, and one other question, and I'm sorry for my ignorance, but the Oregon Boater Education course, is that general boater safety? Is that for non-motorized or motorized craft? Is it strictly related to sailing?
That's a requirement by the State Marine Board for anybody that operates a motorized boat that's 10 horsepower or greater, and for youth age 12 to 16 would require a license for under 10 horsepower. It's generally a safety course and a familiarization course. It's an 8-hour course followed by an exam to get the boater education card, and that's being phased in that all adults will require it here in the next few years. Currently, age 45 and under are required to have it.
I And I, actually, that's the legislature passed it a couple of years ago. Is that right? Okay. Now that you talk about it, I recall. I grew up in Minnesota, and they let anybody run boats in Minnesota. So, any further questions? For Mr. Tinker. Thank you very much. We really appreciate your willingness to serve. We'll be taking up the work session on these executive appointments for today next week, and I'll have Representative Roblad and Senator Verger keep you posted.
All right.
Thank you. Well,
thank you for your consideration. Yeah. Very much.
Okay, next up, I have Mr. John Savage in the room, the Public Utility Commission. Would you please come forward? And Mr. Bissonnette, do you want to come forward as well?
I have copies of a beta. I don't know what you have for background information. You can provide those.
That would be great, Mr. Right. Savage. I actually have mine, but I'm not sure the other committee members do. Yeah.
Chair Brown, members of the committee, for the record, I'm John Savage. Like I said, I brought copies of my vita for your review, some very brief background on my work experience. I've worked in the energy and utility field for more than 25 years. Since September of 2003, I've been a commissioner. Before that, I headed up directed the regulatory utility staff at the commission, was involved in all facets of commission regulation. I worked at the Oregon Department of Energy for a number of years. I served as director of the Oregon Department of Energy for 8 years. Before then, I served as head of its policy and planning division for 7 years. In terms of my interest, I just want to say that this work is incredibly challenging. It's demanding. It's very important. I enjoy doing it. I enjoy working with my current commissioners, Commissioners Beyer and Baum, and they told me to say that. And so I just wanted to say, so I welcome the opportunity to serve another term as a commissioner. That concludes my remarks.
Thank you. Mr. Bissonnette?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jeff Bissonnette, representing the Citizens Utility Board. We represent residential ratepayers, regulated utilities, and practice a good deal in front of the commission. I just wanted to come up and sort of highlight a letter that we distributed on the 7th of February that hopefully is in your various files. If you don't, I can provide additional copies. It was a letter that that Cub sent to Governor Kulongoski, urging him to reappoint Commissioner Savage to his seat on the Public Utility Commission. And we say many nice things about the commissioner, all of which we believe. And we actually, and this was important for us to do this, distributed this letter prior to any decision that was coming in, any controversial cases that were at that time in front of the commission, because we felt that strongly that no matter what the outcome, that the commission with Commissioner Savage as part of it would make a decision on the record that customers could trust in. And so we heartily endorse his reappointment, and to paraphrase a common phrase around here, good commissioners should pass.
Thank you. Mr. Savage, do you have any questions, Senator Shields? Senator Shields.
Okay. Very quick question.
Yes.
3-4 months ago, ran into a lot of commentary from in the media about the quote-unquote inexperience of the Public Utility Commission. This isn't a question about mm-hmm. you. Give us some comfort around that. I didn't agree with them, but why was there so much of that in the newspaper?
I don't know why. I mean, Senator, since I assume it was all because in terms of our tenure at the commission, it was all fairly short. But I have a depth of experience going back for 25 years, as does Commissioner Baum, as a depth of experience, and as does Commissioner Beyer. So they were just simply looking at the length of the tenure. I don't think at the whole experience.
Yeah. I think you're right.
Yeah.
I've appreciated the work you've done. I think the three of you make a good team.
Yeah, I do too. Thank you.
You can tell them that I said that since they sent you with a message.
Thank you. I think that's it. I think the fact that people aren't here screaming and yelling, expressing concerns, speaks well for the wonderful job that you've done. I know for what it's worth that Commissioner Beyer and Commissioner Baum both think highly of you, and you obviously all are working very well together. So we really appreciate your willingness to serve, appreciate your patience. Since you're getting paid, you can afford to sit and wait while we get volunteers in and out of here this morning. So thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Appreciate the chance to meet you.
Yes. Oh, you hadn't met. Okay. All right. We have a few more folks to call by phone. I know Senate D's caucusing. Senate Republicans are caucusing as well. So if you two don't mind, I'm going to move forward and get through the rest of these public hearings.
We can move our carcasses over to the caucuses later.
Okay. Okay.
Go ahead.
All right. I'm just going to pick up. Oh, dang it. No. Why?
Hello?
Mr. Bergrad?
Yes.
Hi, State Senator Kate Brown. I have Senator Farioli and Senator Shields at the dais. Good morning.
Morning.
Would you please tell us a little bit about yourself and why you would like to serve on the Ocean Policy Advisory Council?
Well, I have a master's in oceanography. Actually, a lot more than that. I did everything for my PhD except my thesis. I have served 27 years as a Sea Grant Extension agent in the Astoria area, where I dealt with all kinds of issues related to commercial fishing and oceanographic and marine and river issues. I've been owner of a commercial fishing boat. I've sport fished for years. I've been involved in many environmental issues, including I served on the Salmon Task Force some years ago, which was a government appointment. I've developed, I've started two programs to rehabilitate streams here, the Seaside or Nakanicum Watershed Council and the one that covers the lower Columbia on the Oregon side. I have been asked by local fishermen, I'm a port commissioner of the Port of Astoria, and I've been asked by local fishermen to serve on this as sort of their representative because I've worked with them in the past. And that's the reason that I applied to be on here.
Great. Thank you very much. You also, I just want the record to reflect that you are from Astoria.
Yes.
There has been concern expressed in the past about the lack of North Coastal representation on this particular council, and just want it noted that both you and Mr. McCollin are both from Astoria, and it sounds like you all can will do more than your fair share on the council. Senator Shields, any questions for this gentleman?
I did have an interesting thought as you were talking, Jim, and that is that there's a fairly strong presence of a gentleman who was here earlier, Ono Houston. Do you know him?
Yes.
Do you folks think you'll have a good, healthy dynamic going back and forth in your discussions?
You mean with Ono?
Yes.
Well, I'm the park representative to the OCZMA, and Ono is the executive director, or whatever he calls himself, of that organization. And I have attended most of their meetings. So, yes, I've talked to Ono back and forth. I think we agree on some things, and we disagree on some things.
Follow up, Madam Chair.
Senator Shields.
So you're saying when you disagree, you're not afraid to stand up and say what you think?
I think if you talk to people, you would find that I pretty much express my mind.
Okay. I'm just interested in the dynamics on the committee and hope that there truly is give and take where everybody's listening to one another and that the dialogue is a healthy one.
Thank you. Anything further for the committee, Mr. Bergeron?
one, no, not that I can think of. I don't know much about the mechanics of this committee, but I guess I'll find that out.
Well, as you know, it's kind of been on hold for the last couple of years, so this is a new reconstitution Ocean Policy Advisory Council, so we are going to send you very good wishes and lots of good luck and hope that working together that all of you can come up with some wonderful proposals to deal with a number of issues we're facing in terms of our oceans and coastal environment, so... looks like you have a very talented group of folks.
One other thing that I didn't mention, I'm presently convener of what is called the Near Shore Project, which is an attempt to use dredge spoils to protect the South Jetty.
Okay. Thank you. We appreciate, and that's noted for the record. Thank you very much. We appreciate your time, and we appreciate your willingness to serve the state of Oregon.
Thank you.
That's very good. He really thinks somebody's going to grip the tops. I'm like,
who are we going to
name? Hatch on OPAC. He's the tribal rep.
Hatch, away from my desk right now, but if you leave your name, your number, and a detailed message, I'll get back to you as soon as I can. Thanks.
Mr. Hatch, this is Senator Brown calling. I'm sorry we've missed you. If you get this message before 10:30, if you would give, I don't know, who can we call?
We can call Carol.
986-1700. If not, we'll try and hook up with you another time. Thank you very much.
I can't hear that phone ring. I'm just sitting still. And I haven't gotten very many steps. I'm really sick. Okay. Sorry.
Hello?
Hello?
Is this Mr. Pettinger?
Yes, it is.
Hi, this is Senator Kate Brown. How are you?
Oh, good, Senator.
Good. I've got you on speakerphone, so your voice is going throughout the Capitol, and at the dais with me is Senator Frank Shields. And we're here just to do a quick public hearing on your appointment to the Ocean Policy Advisory Council.
Yes.
And just would like you to explain for the record, after you give your name, a little bit about your background and why you wish to serve on this council.
Sure. Well, my name is Brad Pettinger, and I live in Brookings, and I've been a commercial fisherman, since I was probably 9 years old, I think, 1968 when I started out fishing my father, and I've owned a variety of vessels, and currently own the trawler, which are shrimps and bottom fishes, and also crab fishes off the Oregon coast, and about a year and a half ago, I became the administrator of the Oregon Trawl Commission, and even though I still own the vessel, I'm now going to be taking care of the administrative job there. Anyway, I've just been on things before on the table here the last 2 years, but the Ocean Policy Advisory Council, as a matter of plans is to kind of advise the governor and the state as far as recommendations regarding the state's coastal waters. It sort of affects my business. This affects the people I work with and the people I represent as the administrator of the Oregon Trawl Commission. And with the Marine Reserve MPA being kind of a hot topic the last 2 years, and there's a lot of issues to be resolved, I think, and at least addressed. You know, how they're, why they're, where those reserves would be located at, the constraints associated with them. How you enforce them? There's a lot of issues, and I think that that's probably a good reason to be involved in the process. And hopefully, we can address those in a thoughtful and a rational manner to move forward. So, that's kind of me, I think, for the most part.
Thank you. We appreciate your extensive experience. Are you a reappointment to the...
No, I'm not.
Okay,
no,
you're not. A new appointment. Okay. Yeah. I've got a huge packet of resumes for OPAC here in front of me, so I didn't quite get to yours.
I can imagine.
Sarah Shields.
Yes, just a quick question. you mentioned marine reserves as a hot topic and where they're located as being kind of a controversial issue. What kind of science gets applied to that kind of decision making?
What kind of science you said?
Yeah.
Well, I think everybody's. I'm not sure how to. Unfortunately, the science issues dealing with the ocean are sort of lacking nowadays. And I think a lot of things have come out as far as the rockfish, being depleted in the ocean is certainly a reflection of how much data we got in the system right now. And it's, everybody wants to rush to protect the ocean because of those numbers that are out there. And unfortunately, dealing with those species, it's kind of hard because there's no mechanism to assess those properly. And I think that's one thing to be addressed as we move forward is what are the populations of the rockfish? One of the things I'm doing right now is trying to get some a pilot program going to assess like little rockfish, gray rockfish, and one of the things that we did with National Fisheries Service here just a couple weeks ago was look at little rockfish populations in areas off Newport, and some of the stuff they've seen is very promising, and it's really the population certainly looks way better with just a few days than what we're seeing. And the science thing, it's tough, and I really want to address that on a report. It's a tough situation because we're just lacking data, and I just don't know. Besides my personal observations and talking to people who fish boats and stuff for years, it's more anecdotal than quantitative. Okay.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you very much. Anything further, Senator Shields? No one else has any further questions. We really appreciate your willingness to appear by phone this morning, and we'll let you get back to work.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. You guys have a great day, and thank you all.
Thank you very much. We'll be in touch. Three more. Yeah.
Hello, you have reached PEC Forensic Consulting. It's March 28th. I have a personal family emergency that I must attend to. Be out of state for the rest of the week. I will check my voicemail periodically and hopefully be able to get back to you.
Okay. We'll reconnect.
Who's this one?
Andrew Bentz from Van Standards and Training. Okay, we're back. You warned me, it's not your fault.
Sheriff's Administration.
Hi, this is Senator Kate Brown calling for Sheriff.
Yeah, I've been expecting you. Hang on
okay.
Just a moment.
Thank you.
Help you?
Hi, Sheriff Bentz. This is Senator Kate Brown. How are you this morning?
Good, Sheriff. How are you?
I'm great. I have you on speakerphone, so your voice is being transmitted throughout the Capitol.
Okay, that's always nice.
Yes, just to warn you. Senator Shields is at the dais with me. Unfortunately, the rest of our senators had to leave, and as well as your state senator, Ted Ferrioli, had some caucus business he needed to attend to. So, but we just needed to get on the record a little bit about you and why you're interested in serving on the BSST. BPSST.
Yes, thank you, Chair.
My name is Andrew Bentz. I'm the sheriff from Mount Hill County, and my offices are located in Vail, Oregon, which is the county seat. I'm a resident of the city of Ontario, and I have going on around 24 years of law enforcement experience, all within the state of Oregon, everything from a reserve deputy and reserve city officer to a city officer, patrol officer, sergeant, elected sheriff 9 years ago, actually 10 years ago, I'm in my ninth year as serving in this seat. And I have, law enforcement has been extraordinarily good to me and my family. I have always admired the certification systems we have in this state through all the different configurations it's gone through in those years. And being able to serve on this particular board has always been something that I thought I would like to be able to contribute to. It is the foundation of the profession. Of course, it has expanded much farther. It's encompassed a lot more discipline than it did in the older days, but I think that's a good thing, and I just want to help and contribute to that the best that I can.
Well, Sheriff, we're just delighted. We are really working hard. This governor's working very hard to diversify our boards and commissions, and one of the pieces about diversity is making sure we have geographical representation from all around the state. And while this is a very large board, I note that there are only a couple of folks, three or four other folks, from Eastern Oregon, so we're very grateful for your willingness to serve. Could you talk to me, one of the issues facing the BPSST, the Board on Public Safety Standards and Training, is the growing diversity of the state of Oregon in terms of race and its population, and I'm assuming you're facing some of these issues in your area. And could you talk to me about the efforts you've made at the local level to diversify your workforce and also work with a multicultural population?
Yes, that's very important here in Mount Hill County. We are a diverse community, not as diverse as others, but we have three or four different cultures that have a large standing in our communities. It enriches our community. It also has its challenges, especially when it comes in the area of language and of course, culture itself. Law enforcement has always been faced with that, and I don't believe up until probably 10 or 15 years ago as a whole, I know I'm painting with a broad brush, I don't think we did a very good job at it. We didn't understand it quite as well as we should, and we did not have the tools available to help with this. It has been a challenge, quite frankly, here locally to be able to recruit and to hire folks to bring our own organizations into somewhat closer into the percentages of the community that we serve. And it is continual frustration for me on my own part of trying to guide our organization into good ideas and trying to farm good ideas from other organizations that have faced the same challenges in the past to get that accomplished. I don't have the answers to that. It's something that we are always looking for here, and certainly at the statewide level, we need to continue to do that. It doesn't answer the question very well, but I think it shows some of the frustrations and the challenge of that here in our organization.
I appreciate your willingness to wrestle with the question. Senator Shields, do you have any questions?
Just a real quick question. This appointment of the Board of Public Safety Standards and Training, while I don't know a lot about the board itself, I'm assuming that while you've respected that, you might see your seat as one where you can begin to find out if some other states have some answers with regard to diversity and other things that maybe we haven't found here.
Well, absolutely. I think Oregon is pretty great, and we do a lot of innovative and cutting-edge things in Oregon over the years. The fact of the matter is that we're not the only people on Earth, and there's other states and other regions of our country that I think in a lot of areas have had what I consider greater success than we have in some areas. But the EPSST is the logical place to help nurture some of those ideas and to pass those things down. And if I can, I'd just give a brief example. Within Oregon, just in law enforcement side, just the field services side, which is the state, county, and the city levels, there are cultural differences in those three different levels of law enforcement. The one advantage that I think should always be increased, not diminished, and just in the state of Oregon, is that the one time in every man and woman's career in law enforcement at the county and city level, they all go to the same basic academy together. Now, their paths may go lots of different directions from that time on, but at one point in their history, they were in a class of 30 to 40 other people beginning their careers, and their lifelong networking is going to start right there. And so that is in a way of learning how to share ideas, and for the rest of their careers, mine included, you will always be in contact with those folks, and every time you return to that academy, supervisor school, mid-management schools, executive trainings, all of these different types of training, you just continue to build that brain trust, so to speak, your personal brain trust of people you can access. Now, if that's occurring at the beginning line level, that also should be occurring, in my opinion, at the board level, where we have some people say may even be too large of a board now, but the point is there's lots of people from very different backgrounds and different points of view that if we can come together in setting policy and direction for the future of law enforcement, there's a great advantage in that. And that should be expanded on in the state of Oregon, and I think it will be. And with the new facility coming online, we're going to have the infrastructure to make that happen. And so, with the board, we should be looking at other states. As I know, in a lot of the past investigation we've done, coming up to this facility build, the curriculum redo, go to 16-week basics, all of these different things. That's appropriate for the board to do, and that's my personal hope is that's what happens there.
Thank you very much, Sheriff Fentz. I don't think we have any further questions. I'm getting a nodding head, I don't.
Okay.
But we really appreciate your time and energy and your willingness to serve the state, and look forward to working with you.
Well, I thank you, and I really hope things are successful and I'm able to serve for you.
Great. Take care.
Thank you.
That's an evil mind. Who would have even thought of that? Got two more, gang. I'll give up on text.
Yes, sir, Hatch.
Hi, is this Stephen Hatch?
Yes.
Kate Brown, how are you?
Hey, doing well.
Good. I have you on speakerphone, so you're being run throughout the entire Capitol. Senator Shields is at the dais with me. We've lost our other members, but we just want to get a little information from you for the record.
Sure.
If you would just state your name and tell us a little bit about yourself and why you'd like to serve on the Ocean Policy Advice Spring Council.
Okay. My name is David Hatch, and I'm a tribal member of the Confederated Tribes of the Sioux Indians of Oregon, and currently serving on tribal council. And as I grew up, my grandfather and my father were always telling me about how much the oceans had changed and the estuaries had changed, and I think there's real potential to undo some of that change, and I think there's real potential to restore the health of the Oregon's oceans and estuaries.
Great. Thank you. Mr. Hatch, this is a particular slot for a tribal representative, as I understand. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Some of us think there should be more tribal reps on this particular council, but we'll work with the governor's office to deal with that issue.
Okay, yeah. Really, each of the coastal nations should be represented.
Yes. And you currently work for the city of Portland?
Yes.
And what do you do for the city of Portland?
Engineer.
Great.
What?
He's an engineer.
Engineer.
And how long have you been with the city of Portland?
22 years.
Oh, my gosh. And you live in my Senate district, I note from your resume. So that's great to know. Were you a previous member of OPAC?
Let's see. The tribal council has had, I think, three representatives attending the meetings. I was the last representative to work with OPAC.
So you know that this council's been sort of in flux for the last couple of years.
Well, we haven't met since November of 2002.
Okay. What do you see your role in terms of bringing council members, or how do you see your role in terms of bringing Ocean Policy Advisory Council members together, and what role do you see you play on the council?
I'll try to represent the tribal positions, and that's going to be a real challenge because I really cannot represent other tribes. I can represent the Confederated Tribes of Sweats as a council member, but I can't represent other tribes. It's a real challenge. I do the best I can there by communicating with the other tribal groups.
Okay. Thank you. Questions? Senator Shield? No questions. Mr. Hatch, I think we're all questioned out.
Okay.
So unless there's anything else you'd like to share with the committee, we'll be back in touch. We are doing public hearings today, and we'll probably move forward into a work session next week. If there are any issues, someone from the governor's office or someone from my committee will give you a call.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Okay. Last but not least, one more. Senator Shields, you get the Gold Star Award.
And your name is
Charles Carpenter. We try PACS again. Hello, I'm speaking to Mr. Charles Carnes, please.
Speaking.
Hi, Mr. Carnes. This is Senator Kate Brown. How are you this morning?
Well, fine, thank you.
Good. I've got Senator Shields at the dais with me. We've lost our other committee members. But we are taking your testimony for the record, and just so you know, your voice is being heard throughout the Capitol this morning. If you would tell us a little bit about yourself and why you'd like to serve on the Workforce Investment Board, that would be great.
Okay, Chairman, on the committee. My name is Charles Carnes. I'm in Klamath Falls, Oregon. I've been in the HR field for going on 35 years now, mostly in rural areas. In that time, I've seen a large decline in skilled applicants. And starting years ago, I've been involved in developing and implementing skilled training programs. Now, I'm still doing that, but I'm finding that the applicants I'm getting now are not even good candidates for the training programs. They lack, for the most part, the necessary basic skill sets to even compete. I'm also a member of the local WIB, primarily because of the good work that One Stop does here in Klamath Falls in helping me at my place of business get at least the cream of the crop that's out there. I firmly believe that the Workforce Investment Act is a very good and needed use of public funds, and I'd like to be more involved in those Workforce Investment Act decisions. I have a master's degree in education and many years of experience with skills training programs. Now, almost all of that experience has been in a union setting, and which, as far as I'm concerned, has always been a win-win outcome. But basically, that's why I'm interested in this position.
Great. Mr. Carnes, what would your advice be to legislators sort of wrestling with this issue of making sure folks coming out of high school are prepared for the workforce and some of the unemployment issues that we've been wrestling with for the last couple of years? What would be your advice to this legislature?
Well, if I had my way, I would like to see the entire K-12 school system revamped, particularly in the upper grades, junior high school on. I just don't believe that most kids nowadays are exposed to career opportunities. It's kind of like they're supposed to be going on to college, which a lot of them do not, and they see no relevance to the kind of education that they're getting in the in high school, assuming they even stay in school, that's needed in the environments that I work in, which happens to be manufacturing. But I think that's pretty much true in almost any area after high school. So somehow we need to, we have a local effort, and I think it's going on statewide, for kids that are not dropping out of school, and it's an alternative school of getting more involved in a career path with their education rather than a college path, if you will. And it seems to be producing some pretty good results, and I guess I would like to see that explored at the legislative levels to try to encourage more funding for those kinds of opportunities.
I think if I understand what you're saying, Mr. Carnes, is that you really think that we should be having more extensive tech opportunities, more relevant work, educational opportunities in our junior highs and high schools?
Absolutely, yes.
Are you familiar with Benson High School in Portland?
I'm sorry?
Are you familiar with Benson High School in Portland?
I've read a little bit about that. That's a kind of an experimental center for this kind of thing I'm talking about, isn't it?
Yes, actually. Uh-huh. And my stepson is attending high school there, and it's just been a really marvelous experience for him. He's very interested in going into auto mechanics, and he wants to major in that, and he's done some electrical circuitry and drafting work, and it's just been a very incredible experience for him. I'm hoping we can offer that to all Oregon students that are wanted or interested in it. So,
yes, I would be very much interested in seeing something like that work. I think that's sorely needed.
Sarah Shields has a question.
Okay. Yeah, I was kind of wondering, having lived in the Klamath Falls area 25 years ago, you talked about some stuff that was being done at the local level there with regard to, you know, career-relevant training for maybe junior, senior high school. What is happening in the Klamath area right now, Klamath Falls?
Well, this alternative school just started, as I understand it, a year or so ago. I don't really know much about it. It was just, I just attended the WIB meeting last Wednesday, and there was a presentation on this particular school, and what they're accomplishing. But they have approximately 40 students in the school now, most of which are kids who have dropped out of the mainstream school system. And, well, it's not just it's much more than just getting a GED. It's, they're working with these kids to get them, sort of oriented towards a career, and what that entails. And, as most school systems, as I get it, these people are very fortunate having some very dedicated and motivated teachers. And because of that, the kids are motivated, and they're not seeing any of the usual behavior problems and all of that kind of stuff that detracts from the kids who really want to be there and learning what they're there to learn.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Kearns, we need to move on to our next appointment hearing, but I just want to say thank you. We really appreciate your willingness to serve, and we really appreciate your interesting ideas, and look forward to working with you.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
Okay, goodbye.
Bye-bye. Senator Shields, can I get you to be the chair of the committee while we take Mr. Peck's testimony? I'm going to go down and get on the Senate floor. Would you be willing to do that?
Sure.
I'll go where we're at.
Mr. Peck?
Peck. He's from North Bend, and he's with the Ocean Policy Advisory Council. And you've gotten excused.
Okay.
So, bye, but I just need to get down to the floor.
And when I'm done with that?
We're done. Okay. You can adjourn.
Tell him I'll be alone.
Okay. Take your time.
Thank you.
Hello, this is Jim.
Mr. Peck, this is Senator Brown. I've got Senator Shields here, and I just want to take some testimony for the record about your appointment to the Ocean Policy Advisory Council.
Okay.
What we need to hear from you is your name, your, a little bit about your background, and your interest in serving on the council.
My name is James Peck, spelled P-E-X. As far as my background is concerned, I am retired after 25 years working for the Oregon State Police, and I am self-employed as a forensic consultant for the past 3 years. I have a master's degree in science, primarily in chemistry.
And for the majority of my career with the Oregon State Police, I either worked in or directed forensic crime laboratories within the Oregon State Police. I have published probably 20 different scientific articles. Many of them in peer-reviewed journals. I testify regularly as an expert in court on criminal and civil matters. And I also served 6 years on the North Bend School Board, and one of those years I was the board chair. What else would you like to know?
Well, that's a great background. This is Senator Shields. Can you kind of tie that now to your appointment to the Ocean Policy Advisory Council and talk about what your background is there and your interest there?
Yes. When I'm not working, my favorite recreation is fishing. And I love to fish in the ocean, and I spend a good deal of my time out there. I own a 26-foot boat, and I chase everything from tuna to halibut to bottom fish, salmon. I enjoy it out there. I find the ocean to be very much like a wilderness. Like if you backpack into the Willamette, it's no different than going 20 miles offshore. I get the same sensations and feelings out there.
I take it you've done both.
Yes, I have.
Great.
And I enjoy the reading about the science associated with the ocean. I am very much interested in oceanography. And I follow political issues associated with the oceans and the sportsman's journals that I receive. Oftentimes there are sections in there that talk about marine reserves or changes in regulations associated with pelagic species of fish, status of the whales, et cetera, et cetera. So the oceans are of big interest to me. And I think my number of years in science, especially in the courtroom, I've got a real keen eye for finding junk science. And there's good science and there's junk science, and I think I find oftentimes in the natural resources area they are plagued with you know, some good science and some junk science, just like I see in the criminal and civil arena.
Excuse me, I'm losing track here. Where's home for you?
I'm in Coos Bay.
Okay, in Coos Bay.
Actually, you know, technically I live in North Bend.
Okay. I don't know if you'd want to comment on this or not, but we've had a lot of people this morning talking to us and testifying with regard to their appointment to this particular advisory council. And several times this morning the subject of marine reserves has come up. It's been called a hot topic by more than one person to testify this morning. What kind of science goes into the thinking relative to marine reserves?
Well, there are two sides of marine reserves. One is the political side, which certainly we see in the introduction of a bill in order to try and create these things before the formation of this committee. Then there is the scientific side, and that's the side that is of interest to me. If you're going to deny the public access to public waters or public land, you better have a good scientific reason to do so. And I have read articles regarding reserves. Some of them have some good justifications. Others do not. And I think that's where science gets involved. And I think any decisions that are made regarding marine reserves should be made based on science. I have no opinion right now whether we should have them or should not have them. Because at this point in time, I think it's important to keep an open mind until we hear testimony on what is it that the state of Oregon wants to do.
Okay. Have you seen a film put out about marine reserves entitled Common Ground?
Yes, I have.
What did you think of that film?
It was a nice video. I'm not sure that how much of it applies to our area. In fact, I have been to a marine reserve. I went to one in Florida. And I believe that they have their place in the world marketplace. I don't know yet whether they have their place on the Oregon coast.
What did you think? I've heard a comment similar to your comment about not sure they would fit on the Oregon coast because a lot of the reserves were in the more temperate regions of the world, and you mentioned the one in Florida. But there was one piece of the video that I kind of picked up on where they had a reserve off of a fishing village in a New England coastal community. That occurred to me that that would be somewhat more similar to the Oregon Ocean. You know, it's certainly not down in a temperate region up in New England. What did you think about that?
Well, again, it comes back to scientific justification. Is there a circumstance in and around that New England village that makes one necessary? I know that the cod fishery up there has had its fair share of problems. Perhaps it was created for that reason. Perhaps it was created for protection of some other species. Whether or not off the Oregon coast we have species that require that kind of protection that is then and are not protected by already existing mechanisms such as season closures and you know, habitat closures like for the draggers offshore and so on. If we need to make that jump to a marine reserve, just tell me why we need to do that. Because what that tells me is that it's so important that we're going to tell people they can't go there. And it's a non-extraction area, which means I can't go there and fish. You know, probably I may not be able to walk on the beach there because of one reason or another. Just it has to be justified.
Okay. Thank you for your answers this morning. Is there anything else you would like to have on the public record?
Not at this time. When do you expect to determine who you will select?
At this point, we're taking testimony, and it seems to me that we'll probably have a work session on the group of people that have testified this morning next week. And at that point, those who would have a majority of the committee members would go on to the Senate floor for confirmation. So it's a process that's at least going to take a couple of weeks.
Okay.
Okay?
All right.
Well, thank you very much for your time, James.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And with that, I guess we can close this hearing and the committee. Thank you.